It's time for an inside look at the most powerful motorsport on the planet. WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro.
Hey everybody, welcome back to WFO Radio, following up the Denso Big Go. That's right, the 2020 U.S. Nationals in the books. And for my money, I think it was great. So many storylines, so many just great, unbelievable performances, record-breaking. We had fans in attendance, more fans than we have had. Just awesome. On this show, we have got Coletta Motorsports driver, three-time winner of the Big Go, Sean Langdon, makes it back-to-back for Connie Coletta, and that's just amazing. Had that incredible pedal fest, great qualifying job, so many cool storylines for DHL, and Sean is just minutes away. We're going to speak with Sean. Also, though, we are going to delve into the Lucas Oil Series with Lucas Oil Series stock and super stock racers, the Emmons brothers. And they are, think about that, two twin brothers of triplets, and just a whole bunch of family storylines going on. But they both win the same U.S. Nationals. That's got to be a major milestone for any family. And we always talk about what a big deal family is in NHRA drag racing. So we're going to have Sean just seconds from now. We're going to talk about his win, the round by round, all that stuff. Real quick, though, I want to tell you about the people who make it possible for me to do this show, for me to come on here and talk NHRA drag racing with you guys. And I'm talking about the folks at samtech.edu, the School of Automotive Machinists and Technology. Start your education at full speed. We'll be doing a new factory stock podcast real soon. Aaron Stanfield getting the win. But if you're a young person and you're looking for a career in a CNC machining, maybe you want to end up as a crew chief somewhere down the line, be involved in racing or aerospace, Samtech can give you a great foundational education. We're speaking with Kenny Duttweiler the other day for our Hidden Horsepower podcast. And he said, you know, like, the best advice he can give is to go to a place like Samtech, and amazing stuff. Also, Frank Hawley's drag racing school, the Dragster Adventure. You can learn to drive an alcohol funny car. You can learn to drive a super gas car. You can go on the Dragster Adventure. FrankHawley.com. Total Seal Piston Rings, the leader in ring seal technology. If you're looking for that hidden horsepower, whether it be pro stock or you're trying to set a land speed record on the salt flats in Bonneville, Total Seal is the place. Go to TotalSeal.com, find out more information. And of course, Rodax Coffee and Grills.com, the hot sauces and the spice rubs, it's all good. For those of you that love to grill like I do, Marvin Rodak takes it to the next level. Check him out, Rodax Coffee and Grills.com. All right, it's time to dive in with our top fuel winner. We spoke with Doug Coletta before the race. Now we're speaking with the other Coletta Motorsports top fuel driver who got the job done, his third Indy win, Mr. Sean Langdon. Sean, congratulations, man. Huge win. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Oh, man. We got to speak on Friday night, coming out of the box strong with that qualifying effort that ended up hanging on to number one. And tell me about that. You seemed real confident. You guys had a test session, and just to come out strong, dominate, and win. That's what every driver dreams of.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we went and tested the week before, and the focus was is to just try to fix some of the mistakes that we had made at the couple of the Indy races before. We had some issues dropping cylinders. So we didn't really want to go into Indy, in a sense, kind of blind and just kind of hoping that it'll work. We really wanted to test a couple things and fix a couple things, fine tune a couple things, you know, obviously pay big dividends. So that was, you know, we were able to start off right out of the box with a good run Q1 and, was able to maintain that through the rest of qualifying and get the top spot and, go a couple rounds on Sunday, and the rest is history.
Now, you were very, and I referenced it, and we're going to get to your ladder. I want to talk about the round by round. But this was a crazy weekend because of the Jegs All-Stars, and you had a car in the race, and there's just a lot going on. You always pay attention to Lucas Oil Series racing. That's maybe your genuine passion, your genuine love, big money bracket racing, drag racing of all kinds. But when the All-Stars are going on, you seemed very intent on keeping track of everything that went down.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Jegs All-Stars is the best of the best. So it's always fun to watch the best of the best. You know, I had two cars actually in last weekend, driven by Ryan Mangus and Kevin Kleinweber from Hughes Performance. So yeah, it was long days for me because they started at 7 o'clock in the morning every morning. With the exception of the first day, I was at the Morgan Lucas Racing, the Eric Medlin tournament golfing while they were making their time runs. But I was out there every morning with the guys, helping them warm up and get the cars ready and help do the numbers and all that. So I was out there every morning till, you know, I was out there every morning, 7 in the morning, 6:30 in the morning. And then I was out there till, 10, 11 o'clock at night after running our stuff. I mean, heck, Sunday morning, we got race day, and Ryan and I, he was still in. He had fourth round in the morning. We were warming the car up. It was still dark out. I had to have the trailer lights on to warm the car up in the morning. But, yeah, we left the house about 6 a.m. and got out there at 6:30. So it made for some long days, but, I mean, it's what I love to do, so it's not a problem.
Yeah, you're not digging ditches or, laying pipeline or doing something like it's genuinely hard physical work, something you love. I understand, though, you guys ran into just tough races over there, like crazy, insane tough races. I was hearing about a couple of them, and just that's when you run the best of the best, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah. Kevin, he lost to Chris Whitfield first round. They had a good run. Kevin was driving my yellow car, and he was actually 11 on the tree and went 889 with the 9. And Chris was 006, I believe it was 006 dead on 3. So it kind of locked him out with his 11 light. Kevin hasn't driven in a while, but he did a great job. His very first pass back in the car, never driven the car, but our first run, he was 001, 889 with an 8. And then Ryan did a great job. I made some changes to the car, and he didn't make a good first qualifying or first time run. I kind of gave a bad setup, so that was on me, but we were able to rebound on the second run, and he was, 889 with a 5 or something like that. He ended up going to the fourth round, lost to Dan Fletcher, one of the best in the business. We had a pretty good game plan against Dan, what we felt. Just didn't work out in our favor. Dan made a great run. Ryan was 005, and then got a little behind, went 892, and Dan ended up, I think he was 13 dead on 9. So, it's just he didn't leave Ryan a whole lot of room.
Yeah, and that's the tough deal. And I love to try to explain that. We've got fans of Nitro that are watching and going to watch this, but the racing where the driver is controlling the win margin at the stripe, that you won 2 world championships and big money bracket races are settled. If we could explain to the novice what's going on, they would be amazed by it. It's just the explanation is the great challenge. And, it's tough, but the more we talk about it, the more people hang out. And I'd say for the final rounds, after you guys had all kind of finished up, we had quite a few people stick around for the final rounds, Super Comp, Super Gas, Stock, Super Stock, et cetera.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard. I think, for a lot of the fans that watch, it's just the not understanding, a lot of the classes, which, I mean, I've been involved in this for, however long, 20 some years, and I still don't really understand all the classes. So it's a lot to keep up with. There's when you get into comp eliminator or stock eliminator, super stock, of just all the different classes and size motors, weight to cubic inch, all that kind of stuff. And then the super comp, super gas, obviously, with the going on the down power, going on the throttle stop, it's not really appealing, but from the actual number side of things, it's difficult. There's so many variables that go into these things, of trying to dial the car, of understanding the weather, the track, the wind, creating your throttle stop ratios and, what your opponent's doing, if they like to hold, which means, set up a little fast, you try to set up fast with them, play some finish line games, how critical the starting line is. There's so many variables that go into it, but, the driver talent in those classes is really unbelievable. I really feel like you could probably take a couple handful of people out of those classes and stick them into a pro stock car, a top fuel or a top fuel dragster funny car, and they would excel just as well as anybody else.
And you're the example of it. You went back to back Super Gas World Championships, and you get an opportunity to drive top fuel. And I remember speaking with you back then, like, oh my goodness, this is going to be great. And look at the career you have had, now winning your 3rd U.S. Nationals, the 1st in Super Gas, 2 in top fuel. Corey Mihalik out there runs A Fuel saying, way to go. Sean Torrey out there saying you had an awesome car on race day. Steve saying, bracket racing takes skill and some luck. He's a motorcycle motorcycle bracket racer 950 index, and the fans out there weighing in. Yeah, and you can do it, right? Like, our listeners could go, maybe depending on obviously pandemic related stuff, could go bracket racing this weekend in their family car and try to do it at their own level. To me, that's the best part about it. It's super accessible.
Yeah. You could go to your local tracks. A lot of local tracks have their own point series. Obviously a lot of the high dollar bracket races. But the good thing about...
Uh-oh, Sean's getting a phone call. Now Sean's back. Hey, I got you.
You there?
Yeah, we got a phone call or a text or something. That's part of it. Everybody's used to that now. Don't worry about it. You just come back and we'll get you.
This dang iCloud deal, everything's tied into one another, so...
Hey,
it's all crazy.
This is post-COVID. There's been a lot of negative stuff, but the fact that I can see you and we can connect and have people live feedback at the same time, I think it is great. And it's been a lot of fun, right? Now that we've got winter views where we can speak with people that actually won races and have stories to tell, it's going to be even better. Let's talk about your race. In that first round, Joey Haas, how about this guy? Qualifies, first time ever, but you were not... holding back at all, 72.9, 315, 053, and I guess ran the racetrack. Some might have tried to pull back, slide it down through there. Connie and Kurt Elliott were not doing that.
Well, there's two ways to really look at it, right? So you could go and, how they qualified, we kind of felt like if you could go and slide down and make a run of mid 370 or something like that, but the thing of losing lane choice, you don't really want to just make a run down the track, and then sometimes you may try to back the car off and then the track's really good and it can bite you on the backside of it and you can go into tire shake. So you really just have to go up there with the mentality of just go make the run that you really feel like you can. We went up on the first qualifying run and went that 372, and on the last run Q3 we're probably going to go like a 370 if I didn't lift at 660, which was a planned shutoff. So we really felt like a mid-low 370 was pretty feasible without getting ourselves into too much trouble, but also make a respectable run. And then also be able to hopefully set yourself up for lane choice in round two. You don't want to take anybody lightly. You don't want to just go completely lay up on a run because anything can happen. You can shake the tire, you could drop a cylinder, and then kind of put yourself in harm's way. So, we really just tried to address it the best we could. I had three first round. The mentality on my side, I really felt like I'd probably be in the range of like 58 to 65. So I hit it a little better than I thought, which is good. It's first round of Indy. You obviously have a little bit of adrenaline going. So, attributed a little bit of that to that.
And we'll talk about your reaction times. I hear a celebrity racer was giving you a hard time just for fun. We'll talk about him momentarily. And you're going to face the winner of Doug Foley and Corey Mack, right? Corey Mack is back and he's been around for a long time. He and Foley have this great race from the 8 and 9 slot, and Corey Mack advances, throws down a 373.1 at 330, his first 330 mile per hour run of his career. And you were able to get in on him, 069.372. And Corey Mack claims to be out here and he wants to know why you beat up on him. That's what he says. Corey says, "Why did you beat up on me?" And he gave you all you could handle. What was that like going up against Corey Mack? Kind of a rare thing because he's back only part time. I wish he was back as often as he wants to be, but kind of cool. Tell me about that race. It was a squeaker.
Yeah. Well, truth be told, of the whole situation, my very first race, I'm a brand new, fresh rookie. My very first race in Pomona, 2009. Corey Mack whooped up on me, and he whooped me back. So maybe that was a little bit of a payback for him. But I love racing Corey. He's an awesome guy, awesome ambassador for the sport. It's awesome to see him back. He's a great driver. Very deservingly that he's back in a ride right now. And obviously, that second round matchup is a testament to their team. They have a good team over there. And, Don Schumacher is very capable of putting teams together, and you put in a good driver like Corey, and you know, get Todd Okahara. I believe it's Todd that's doing the tuning on that. But you kind of get that combination going, and you know, it brings you back to years ago when they were running and winning a lot of races, and that team's very capable of it. So we really knew that round, you know, that we weren't going to take it lightly. We were really going up there full race mode mentality of, you know, we need to figure out a way to get a little starting line advantage. They're going to have a good car. We need to make a great run in our lane. It had warmed up a little bit for that second round. The 72 is a little surprising. You know, that, you know, I didn't really even talk to them after the run. I don't know exactly what they were trying to run on that, but I figured going 72 first round, it warms up a little. You know, we might be 74, maybe 75 in that range. But obviously we needed every bit of that 72. So it was a good thing that, you know, Connie and Kurt, you know, made the calls they did and gave me a race car to, you know, get around one of the best in Corey McLenathan.
He was fired up. I just hope he continues in, you know, my editorial out there is fans love Corey Mack, guys. Fans love Corey Mack. Fans of racers love seeing him out there. And obviously he can get the job done. And you ran Todd Okahara twice. We'll talk about that. All right. Semifinal matchup against the kid, Justin Ashley. And everybody loves seeing the cars go down the track flawlessly. That's cool. Performances, record performances, great runs, all of that. But every once in a while, we get one of these pedal fests, if that's what we're still calling it, which, like this one, happened right off the line. And for my money, these are the historic runs. Everybody who left that place on Sunday night, they remembered the run between you and Justin. So, first of all, talk about getting ready for the run, knowing that Justin, as a rookie, can leave with you, something that few people can. For whatever reason, he's excellent on the tree. Great reaction times and getting geeked up to go after it. And then all of a sudden you smash the gas and you're spinning the tires instantly. And now it's about experience. 7-second runs. You came out on top, but just walk me through it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to kind of go off a little, what you said, you know, I'm just trying to keep up with Justin. He's doing a fantastic job inside of the race car in his first season. There's a lot of things you know, a lot of things that I've learned over the years, whether it be in bracket racing or in Top Fuel, that, you know, cutting reaction times and there's so much pressure up there. There's so much pressure to perform. There's so much pressure, that you put on yourself. There's so much pressure that the team kind of, you know, relies on you to, you know, perform and to give them an advantage. And he's handled that pressure very well, in all situations, obviously. Got their first win last weekend, him and Aaron. Dude, that's, and I've kind of said that, you know, since the beginning of the year is I wouldn't really say that that's a sleeper pick because, you know, that team can contend for a championship. But that's a team that not really a whole lot of people were talking about, but Aaron's very capable of, you know, producing fast race cars. And when you have a driver that can consistently cut 1/100th or 1/100.5 advantage over the driver, or over the other team, you know, it kind of takes me back to a little bit of the Alan Abbey days racing with Alan Johnson when we had a, you know, a really fast car, but I was able to do a fairly good job in the sense of we were able to create some advantages over other drivers of cutting reaction times. It made Alan's job a little bit easier where he didn't necessarily have to go out there and push every single run. We would kind of strategize a little bit of assess the situation, assess the lane, who were racing, what I felt I could be on the tree, what I felt they could be on the tree. And we studied all that stuff. You know, and I think that you have a situation over there, you know, where they can utilize his reaction times as an advantage. So, you know, for me, obviously you look at his track record for the year and he's a 30 and a 40 guy going shallow. You know, he has a couple lights where he'll catch them right and go 10 or 20. So, you know, I tried to change a couple things up. We had some things that we addressed that we talked about. And I knew that I mean, really to give us a chance, what I felt like we could run and what I felt like that they could potentially run to give us a chance. I had to be at least, you know, 40 something on the tree. I wasn't really banking that we were going to outrun them by over 200s. So I felt like if, you know, this guy's in a situation where if he goes 30 or 40, and I go 50, I don't really like my chances. So, you know, I really just just did, like I said, did a couple things. You know, I don't want to share too many secrets, but you know, I was able to pull out a 39. I remember hitting the gas, and I'm thinking, well, damn, I think I seen his bulbs go out before mine. And I was just like, ah, and then immediately goes up in smoke. I see his car go out in front of me, and then I see him go up in smoke. So it's just trying to get my car calmed down. And, you know, and then when I get back on the gas again, it moved me hard over to the left. It dropped the cylinder on the left side. So it kind of moved me out of the groove. And then it goes back up in smoke. And then I see his nose poke back out again. And we go back up in smoke. And it just, from that point, every time I got off the gas, I could hear him over there, you know, trying to pedal to get the car, his car to recover. So it was pretty intense. A couple times, you know, I got the thing pretty sideways, a little more in my like, and a little more than I should have. But you know, when you're out there racing for a win, you know, you do as a driver, you know the risks, you assume the risks, and you do whatever it takes. I mean, I've had an instance 6-7 years ago. I was driving for Alan Abbey. We were in Charlotte, and my steering wheel pops off at 330 feet. So I throw the steering wheel on the ground, and I drive it to the finish line with the steering shaft, go 383 at 320 miles an hour. And it's like, what are you doing? But you don't think about that as a driver. You right. just think about, I got to do whatever it takes to get the car to the finish line. Now, after the fact, you say, well, that was pretty dumb. You need to be a little safer the next time. But
you was know, your instinct?
Girl, yeah, it's just absolute instinct. And you're doing everything. You're not really thinking about it. You're just adrenaline's going. And you're just reacting to everything, and you got to do what it takes to get the win. And fortunately, you know, we got the win. Yeah, it looked great. Yeah, we got the win light. I didn't really do a good job pedaling. I talked with Connie after the run. I learned a couple things, a couple little mistakes that I had made on that run. But, it, you know, it's all about learning. And so I definitely learned some things. Hopefully the next time I'll have to pedal it 6 times to get down there.
Right. Exactly. And that's the thing, that you're always learning, even still. Multi-time champion, and you've driven funny cars. You've been in this learning mode, going from funny car back to top fuel, all of that. It's definitely kept you from getting comfortable. You haven't ever gotten to just be comfortable in a car for a while. And maybe that's a good thing, that you've been in this like constant learning mode. Now back in top fuel and going to a final round. Terry wants to know if you were dropping F-bombs during the pedal fest. Are you talking to yourself while that's going on, or are you just thinking and doing?
No, there's no F-bombs. You know, I was pretty pumped after I won. And then it was kind of like, what the hell was that type of thing? but I think it was more of just relief after the run, of that I was just from one side of the track to the other, and all the pedals. And I have one hand trying to grab the brake to slow the tires down, and then trying to get the car squared back up before I hit the gas again. And there's just so much going on. And I think it was just more of a relief when I got through the finish line and saw the wind light on.
Yes, exactly. Now, I want to get to the final round and spend a little time on that and show some pictures, because you made Connie Coletta super happy. And to me, that's what this is all about. But you did say something that I know the listeners are wondering what the heck you're talking about, and I think it's a good way to address it. And I got the tree back there. You said you watched the lights go out, and you're talking about the pre-stage bulbs, and I don't think that everybody understands that. So you don't have to go too in-depth, but explain what you mean. Like, you're trying to figure out who had the better reaction time by watching the pre-stage bulbs go out because your car is moving. That's not, I don't know that that's commonly known by fans. So dive in.
Yeah. Well, so to kind of backtrack a little bit, that's something that I picked up with in sportsman racing and racing super comp, and doing a lot of the bracket racing stuff, is addressing and notifying your reaction time before you know, basically get going into the run. So, you know, when I would race super comp, you would obviously look at the yellow bulbs, the three ambers, and you know, when you see the yellow come on, you react to it. Now, out of peripheral vision, what I can do is I can typically tell about 2/100ths or so, that if my bulbs of basically my pre-stage and stage bulb can go out before my opponent's pre-stage and stage bulb. And typically I could tell about 2/100ths. Any closer than that, it's really hard to tell. maybe a little bit at night, but not in the day. So you would use that as an advantage tool in sportsman racing, to where if theoretically, if you can tree somebody by 0.02 of a second, and no matter what, you take the finish line by less than 0.02 of a second, you will win 100% of the time every time. So that was always a kind of a tool that I used. Also on the flip side, if I felt like I got treed on the starting line, then I would address the finish line differently, of whether to take the stripe or to give the stripe up to run my respective dial-in. So just doing that for so many years, it's kind of carried over into the top fuel car, to where, you know, I don't really think about it, and I don't really try to pay attention to it, because it really doesn't matter, because it's not like there's anything I can do to change whether I get treed or not after the fact. But it's just something that I'm used to doing, and something that I can pick up on. I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but
can't turn it off. It's not.
I think sometimes when I get out top end, and I may get out and the people are all standing down there, and I get out and I'll say, dang, I treat them by about 400 or 500, and they kind of just look at me like I got three eyes on my head, and then they'll look at the time slip and they'll say, well, that's okay, yeah, you're pretty close. So, but that's another thing I try to do, is I get out of the car and whether I hit the tree or miss the tree, you know, I try to, you know, tell my reaction time to my crew guys before we ever see it. And that way I kind of feel like if I can guess my reaction time within 5 or 6 thousandths of a second, then I kind of feel like I'm kind of in tune with myself of being comfortable and knowing where I'm at on the tree. So what I'll typically try to do is before I go up for a run, I'll say, well, you know, based off of everything, I should be 60 to 65, you know, in qualifying right now. Well, if I'm constantly going 70s or 75, well, then we either have something going on with the car that's causing the car to react a little slower, or maybe it's something going on with me that's causing me to react a little bit slower. So it's kind of a tool that I use, that I talk a lot with the crew chiefs on, of just kind of, I mean, every thousandth counts, right?
Absolutely. And to me, every sport, being a student of the game, whether it be golf, which I know you play, and others, like we've seen the evolution. Like, think of baseball players, right? Back in the day, they used to go, you know, eat hot dogs and drink beer and have a late night and stagger into the ballpark and take some cuts and hit some home runs, and it was great. And now they're using all this high tech and advanced training, and they're really focused. They're using video analysis of pitchers and books and data. And every sport has done that, and you're doing that. And it's not just see yellow, smash the gas, wrestle a car down there. You're thinking at a higher level how to beat your competition. And it's clearly working, and that's what it takes to be successful in drag racing now. You can't just go out and stab the gas. I mean, maybe you can. I guess that seems to be what Justin is doing. But then again, he was 001. That's a bit of an anticipation, caught a little bit of a break. But you go to the final round. And now you got to run Leah. So you got to run Todd Okahara for the second time. Hadn't thought about that, right? And Don Schumacher Racing versus Coletta Motorsports. We got that going on the other side as well. It's kind of a couple times. Very interesting, this matchup. Let's be honest. A couple of years back, I don't know about now, but a couple of years back, there was a little friction. This was a much anticipated matchup between Leah DSR, Sean Langdon, Coletta Motorsports. So tell me how you prepared. You want to win this thing regardless who you're running.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, that was kind of one of the things back in 17 that I wasn't able to accomplish when I first went over to Coletta Motorsports, was to win with Connie as a crew chief. So, you know, that was that final round for me was one of those rounds that you don't lose under any circumstance. I mean, it's you pull out all stops. This is I really kind of treated that final round like the championship was on the line. I had that, I was that motivated, and I had, you know, that much in my thoughts of, you know, you don't lose this round. So,
that's awesome,
you know,
though.
Like, I felt, I really felt like we had a good car. I really, you know, they said that they were going to try to push it a little bit. So, you know, I really felt confident. You know, obviously we smoked the tires for a reason. We had a blower line or a blower lube line break in the semis. So that was really the cause of our tire smoke in the semis. outside of that, we have made so many good runs. So I really just had the mentality of give me a 372 race car, because give me a 372 race car, let them go 369 or 370. I'll get it done.
Right.
And so that was I had a pretty aggressive approach to the final. I know a couple of the last couple of times I had run with her. The way that I chose to stage was maybe a little on the slow side and get some long flickers in there. This time I decided to go the opposite and try to throw a little monkey wrench into what I thought their game plan might be of addressing the starting line. And I tried to time it to where I staged just right before her based off of her routines. I mean, that's another thing I kind of do is I really kind of study everybody's routines of the length of time it typically takes them to get to pre-stage to stage. So I kind of know where I'm at. If I want to stage last, if I want to stage first, you don't want to hang people out by multiple seconds. You don't want to do things to get people to two-step or to red light or to go to 150 on the tree, but you do things to create minimal advantages for yourself and for your team. So I really felt like if I can slide in there right before she stages, you know, I felt like, you know, if she goes 80 to 90 on the tree, then, you know, maybe best case scenario, 70 something. You know, I felt like there's no reason why I couldn't equal or better my 039 against Justin Ashley. So, you know, I really just kind of had that mentality of, hey, just give me a 372 race car, let them try to go 69 or 70. And I still think that I still like our chances.
And you came out on top. We got some photos. Obviously, this is one where we see, you know, green light on, car ahead. That's what you want. I like the fact that you were on kill and loaded up to win this one for Connie, you and the team. And this is another layer to being with Coletta Motorsport. And I want you to speak on this. Is Connie Coletta has given so much to the sport financially and in very serious ways, thinking about Scott, thinking about his family. He could have walked away after that. He stayed with it. He loves drag racing. This is his sport, his life, to deliver another victory, back-to-back victories at the race that is the most important to him. I want you to talk about this photograph right here, Sean. Like, look at that. A moment where Connie Coletta is, he gets a rep as like a kind of a hard person. And I know that that's true. But also, he is a super appreciative person to the guys that he loves and cares about on his team. I've heard that from everyone. I think this photograph, like, what was that like for you to be able to deliver that, experience that? You've had a lot of big wins for a lot of legends, including Connie. This is the big go. Tell me about it.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you talk about a picture worth a thousand words. You know, that's it right there. I mean, as a kid, being a huge fan of the sport, watching Connie Coletta and Scott Coletta and Doug Coletta race, going and getting all their autographs as a kid, to, you know, eventually racing for Connie. You know, it's an unbelievable feeling. It's definitely an honor. And to be a part of his journey and his legacy is a very, very humbling experience. And he gives you such a great opportunity to go out there and to compete at the highest level. And, you know, through all the craziness that's gone on in 2020, you know, like you said, with the stuff with Scott or with the stuff that's happened in the past or, you know, with the stuff that happened this year, he could have easily just closed the doors and at any given time and gone back to his business and flying planes. But he doesn't, because he loves the sport so much. And, you know, through all the stuff this year, there wasn't a single person that got laid off. There wasn't a single person that took a pay cut. You know, he continued through all of this to pay every employee full salary. He continued to keep everybody employed, keep everybody working. And I remember when we first got back going racing at the first Indy event this year, and I went up to him and I said, thank you. And he said, oh, yeah, no problem. And I said, no, Connie, really, thank you for everybody, for everything that you've done. You didn't have to continue to pay us. I mean, you know, still getting full salary and not going out racing, it's not cheap. And so, you know, he didn't bat an eye about it, and he continued to pay us. And I said, man, it really means a lot to me that you did that. And I'm very appreciative, and I just want you to know that. And, you know, he said, hey, he says, he told me, he says, I've been there before. He goes, I know how it is, and I'm just glad to help. And that's Connie Coletta right there.
Wow.
Is, you know, the compassion that he has, but also the passion for the sport. So for me, you know, it was a combination of so many things. Yeah, you know, I'd like to win it for myself, and you know, to win Indy a third time is an awesome feeling, and that's great and all. But, you know, for my crew guys who completely bust their butts all year long, long days, long hours, and to give them an opportunity to win Indy again. You know, some of them were, they had won with Richie before, and you know, just, but to win Indy, and to you know, I wasn't able to win with them in 2017, so to do that, but also to give back to Connie, that was the most important thing, and that was the biggest thing for me out of that weekend. I mean, yeah, you know, I guess the 40% check or 50% check that we get is nice, but the Wally's nice, you know, that stuff just kind of comes and goes. But to be able to give back to somebody that stuck with you through hard times and was able to help you out, you know, those are the things that mean most to him. I feel like, so I'm just glad to be a part of it.
Wow, Sean. No, it's great. It's just great to hear the multi-level discussion on this sport, because it is, it's like, this is a sport, but everyone is doing it for somewhat of a higher purpose that is known to them. Great job. We got the Emmons brothers coming up next. How about that? Two brothers that win stock, super stock, pretty amazing. And then you go on Twitter and you're all like happy, and then Snake attacks you. How about Snake attacking you with reaction time in the final round and says he pulled it out of you know where? How about that? What's up with Snake?
He didn't have much to say after I responded.
I know. Well, you're more Twitter savvy. He didn't want to get into it with you.
So he said I pulled that reaction time out my butt. Which for the record, there's nothing with Snake and I. We're good. He's an awesome guy. We talk a lot, but we can joke around like that, and you know, we can have fun with it. And it was actually really cool. A couple years ago, Barrett Jackson, he had me drive his funny car across the stage when it went to Barrett Jackson. So I've always been a huge fan of Snake. But yeah, so he wrote that. I don't remember what I wrote. I got too much stuff on there. But it was something about along the lines of, well, if you can't go to Indy in the final round and cut your best light, what are you even doing in a race car?
Right.
Right. I mean, that's the pinnacle of what you're doing, right? That's the biggest race of the year. So if you can't cut your best light and you get your worst light, then that's a problem. You know, there's no excuses. It's Indy final. You got to give everything you got.
And you did, and you won it, and you got the job done, and you have earned the right to battle back against Snake. And
well, I don't know about that. I still try to keep it
world champion,
a little bit respectful, but you know, he's a legend. I'm still working on the whole name thing.
That's fine. But he likes that. Like, I can tell you from afar, I know Snake like less than you know Snake, but I can tell that that's the kind of guy he is. He loves the fact that he could push back and you'll push back. And I appreciate it, and keeps him in and active, involved. The fact that you're having a Twitter battle with Snake, that's weird.
He's just mad I beat his girl. Lee is his girl. So he's a little bent out of shape. I beat up pretty good.
I noticed you didn't say that. That would have been fun. That might have been.
Hey, look, you know, I've learned my lessons over the years of things that I say on podcasts and things that I say
wisdom
on whatever it is, TV or interviews, or people don't always like what I have to say. Not a lot of people like facts. Not a lot of people like truth. So I found the happy medium now where I don't get attacked so bad in my direct messages.
Well, good. Well, you're going to get attacked as a U.S. Nationals winner, so who cares? Sean, thank you for making the time. You stuck with us for like 40 minutes, man. I didn't plan for it to be 40 minutes of your time. I know you're busy, but thank you, because we got a full debrief on your Top Fuel win and learned a lot also about your staging, your mental aspect. Five races to go. Gator Nationals next. I'm hoping we get them all in. I'm excited to see you go out there and keep on trucking. Thank you for making the time with us here on WFO.
All right, thank you, guys.
All right, there he goes, Sean Langdon. with us here on WFO Radio. Really appreciate Sean. He stuck in there for a long time and just gave us everything we could have possibly asked for. That was awesome and great finals and great battles. Hey, I want to remind everybody also real quick, if you want a face covering, WFO Radio style, go to WFOradio.com. Just $10, including shipping. We'll send it out. It'll be great. I feel like it's great. I'll throw some WFO Radio stickers in there. Or if maybe you just want some WFO Radio stickers and you hate face coverings, which I get it. P.O. Box 848-353, Pembroke Pines, Florida, 33084. Put two stamps on your self-addressed stamped envelope, and I'll throw a couple of stickers in, and I'll give you an example of somebody who's got WFO Radio stickers on his vehicle. Right now, get this, Stock Super Stock, final round winners. They are also brothers. We have got Jerry and Terry Emmons. And look at that, we're seeing double. Look at this. Let me get rid of myself here. Look at that. Look at these guys. Congratulations, guys. Huge victory. But I'm not going to tell you. You tell me. Winning Indy as brothers, is that something you ever dreamed up or planned? Jerry first.
Absolutely. Obviously, you always want, because we take a stalker and a super stalker to the events, obviously the ideal outcome is to win a stock and super stock championship on the same day. But, yeah, it is a dream. Absolutely. Have we done it before? Yes. But, I mean, look, we've been racing for a long time. It's only happened a number of times. But to do it at the U.S. Nationals, I'm telling you, that's a miracle.
It really is a miracle. And to go rounds and stay together. But you guys are used to hot lapping cars like crazy with other drivers in and around. And that's part of your MO, Terry. Was this any different? Did you feel like you had it under control the whole way? And as you're getting down in the rounds and getting late, you're looking over at each other thinking, we are doing something special. Terry, tell me about it.
It became really clear that when we were down to eight cars, okay, this could really happen. I mean, as you're going through the eliminations, you're hoping, you know, you hope he gets a win light, I get a win light. But when we got down to eight cars, that's when it became apparent we really have an opportunity here. And as we got closer and closer to it, I couldn't go up to the start line with them, which made it a little harder for me, but I could always listen. And then, of course, we had people there with us that would tell us thumbs up or thumbs down. And I kept getting a thumbs up. And then before the final, I rolled up to the front of the staging lanes and with Fletcher, and we were out of the car and we were watching. And Dan Fletcher and his son were there watching, and they were very happy for Jerry as well. They were congratulatory and very, very nice. And then we got in the car, and then it was my turn to try to make it happen.
And on that note, like, okay, so we got a couple of photos. Like, that is an iconic photograph if you're a family who races. That's not something, and I understand why you guys hung out to do that. Like, that's not something that really happens.
Well, and that's it. We wanted to make sure we had more photos than probably what we needed. The winner's circle was at the last turnoff, but it was complete pitch black. We were using vans, golf carts, whatever we could use for headlights to put light on it. And we said, you know, when you think about winning Indy, you think about the crosswalk, you think about the American flag, you think about the Lucas Oil Raceway sign. And we wanted something there in front of that that we could hang on the wall here at the dealership and just something you can remember it by. So.
Well, there it is. All right. So for people out there who want to know, because, you know, it's all about drag racing, but how can we tell you guys apart? Like, we're seeing double on the screen. You guys part of triplets. Why don't you do that? Jerry, give us the whole family layout. We talk about the Emmons brothers, usually five, six cars parked out there. But for the Nitro fans of Sean Lang, they're like, all right, these guys are like, what? Lay it all out for everybody. The lineage. You guys are triplets, but you have an older brother.
Yes, yes. So we have an older brother, Harvey Emmons the third. He's obviously named after my father, Harvey Jr. And he actually chose to stay behind for this weekend so he could run the dealership so that Terry, Gary, myself could race and that everything would be taken care of on the home front.
Wow, that is neat. And you guys are, you know, identical is the word. Is the word. Like, that's the word.
You can really tell the difference if you could spend just a few moments talking to us. Our personalities are very different. Terry is very outgoing. I'm a more introverted person.
You're the shy one? Jerry's the shy one?
Yeah, that's right. Shocker.
All right.
So anyway, and Gary is a more serious look. He always, I don't want to say he never smiles, but he has a serious look. I'm just very introverted, and Terry's very outgoing.
What was it like growing up as kids? You know, ever pull any tricks on people? Like, it's
no, something I can't relate to.
I
wish we would have. You know, we've always been asked the question, did you ever switch classes in school? And I regret to tell you that we never did that. I guess we were too
good kids,
scared to do it. You know, scared to get in trouble with our teachers or with our dad. Our dad would have hit the roof if that would have happened. So, but we have had a lot of fun over the years in drag racing, especially years ago. We were probably in our teens, probably 17 years old. We were at a NHRA Division IV race. And the NHRA tech officials, and I still to this day do not know if they were serious or if they were just having some fun with us, but they put the same color wristbands on our wrist and then also put a wristband on the outside door handle of our 69 Camaros. So that way the color of the wristband would match the color of the wristband on the door of the car, because, you know, there was sometimes people would say, oh, you guys are changing drivers and things like that.
Right.
But the NHRA, we have had a great relationship with everyone in Division IV. The tech guys specifically, and I could, there are stories I could go on for days to tell you about, but they really have made it fun for us growing up. And we're in our 40s now, and we started when we were 14 years old.
Oh, wow.
And I can tell you that every member of our Division IVs have been, and even NHRA across every division have been nothing but phenomenal to us throughout our entire career.
Well, you know, the Coughlins and the Emmons, these big racing families who everybody's in and this is what you do. And there's not really someone who went bowling, right? It's everyone is all in on drag racing and a huge investment. You've had Lucas Oil on board with you for a long time. Speak on that relationship a little bit, to have a company like Lucas Oil support you in such a way that you can, you have a family business, the car dealership, but that you can do this and be part of NHRA drag racing at all these national events, a divisional level, chase these dreams, chase these championships.
Absolutely. A funny story. So Bob Ungerfer, he was a NHRA announcer and also still is.
Yeah,
he actually played a huge role in getting us the Lucas Oil sponsorship. There was a conversation that took place years ago. And at the time, we were having trouble getting funding, and, you know, we wanted, you know, some help getting on the right path to get to the right people. And so we had kind of made a deal with Bob. I said, Bob, if you could help us get a deal with anyone, we will put you in a stock limited car, all expenses paid. Let's go racing together and have some fun. Not only did we benefit, but Bob Ungerford won a national event. And not only did he win it, he won it in style. I think it was 00 the last three rounds and 00 dead on in the final.
Now,
so Bob Ungerford actually played the huge role in putting us with Lucas Oil.
So Ungerford was on a few weeks ago as like one of our guests was a little delayed and he was out there. And I said, Unc, get on the show. And he jumped on and he told us that story. And it is every announcer's dream. That's the announcer's dream. I used to bracket race, but come on, I'm going to jump in a car on a weekend and go out and run stock eliminator and win? No, that's not going to happen. But Unc did it, and he did it in one of your
Absolutely.
Cars. That's just insane. So Terry, tell me a little bit about your day. I don't have the ladders in front of me, but I do know it's all a blur right now, but I know there were some very tough races. It's
yes.
Indy. There's very tough racing all the time. And then, you know, maybe give me your toughest race or two throughout the day and then tell me about the final.
Sure. Yeah, there's, gosh, when we're recapping the weekend, it seemed like a lot of the races were decided at the finish line by 00. In the second round, I had to run Brina Splinger, and she's been really hot lately. She got her cobalt back together, and I think the finish line there was 0008.
Wow.
I think is what it was. And then the next round, it became, you know, I don't remember who I had in the third round. I think it was Craig Gutierrez. We had a really good race. It was 00 at the finish line then. And then one round I got lucky. I had a 75 light.
The lucky round. Got to have
it. The lucky round. Got to have it, right? And I'd actually, instead of releasing the trans brake button, I actually gave it one of the jimmies. I gave it a push in before I pulled it out. And luckily my opponent was red. And he was only red by a few thou, 6 thou, I believe what it was. And so very, very lucky, fortunate. And you think at that point, okay, well, you know, and that started to wear on me a little bit as the day went on. it's like, I don't want to do that again, because that's the chink in the armor, right? It's like, oh no, is the thread coming off the button? Am I falling apart here? You know, is the pressure getting to me? And then there was some time in between runs. I was able to get the composure back together, get the lights where they needed to be. And then had a really good race again against Kent Hanley in the semis. He was one thou under. I was one above, and I think I got there first by 3 minutes.
Wow. Oh, he's back. We lost you for a second, but now you're back. He was what? Three what?
Sorry, is the audio there?
Yeah, no, I got you. Now I got you.
Okay. So it's one of those deals where in the semis, it was such a good race. Greg Gutierrez was a good race. Brina was a great race. Two of my opponents had red lighted. The opening round was a red light against a Hemi car, Portatree, actually. Oh. Al Smythe. And it was just one of those just lucky opportunities. And then as we got to the final to run Fletcher, I even told him when we flipped for lane choice, I said, you know, these are the things that the kids dream about, right? Bottom of the ninth, bases loaded kind of thing. And I told him, I said, it's one of those opportunities that you think about when you work on your car in the garage. You're going to face a lion, a big opponent, right? And you're just going to – and the opportunity there to win. But in reality, you don't want to face the lion. You don't want to have a guy like Dan Fletcher in the final of the U.S. Nationals because you're going to lose.
Right.
I mean, that's – you know what I mean? So,
get eaten.
So it was really hard to stay focused because I knew he was going to lay down a terrific run like he always does. He never misses. At least if it does, his miss is probably someone else's great run, you know, because his window is so tight. His strength is so incredible. And that's why he's won way over 100 national events. So as we rolled up, I knew Jerry had won, and I was trying to focus more. I think I was more focused on not going 0-2. I wanted Jerry to win because I didn't want the pressure to be on me to win one of the two.
Right.
Now, the double was definitely important. Don't get me wrong. We always want to do the double. But I was in fear more of losing both finals than doing the double. That was more important, to get one instead of two, if that makes sense.
Well, it does, absolutely. Because you walk away as winners. Family are winners. Yeah. We came. We won something. We won. But
that's right.
He goes out there and wins. And now, all of a sudden, the double is possible. And you got Fletcher in the other lane, and you beat him. So tell me about the run.
So when we staged, and I could see his tree flash, a couple of flashes come down for his head start, and then I just focused, and there my yellow started to come down. When I let go, I thought I was as good as I'd been around before, maybe a touch better. But it's nighttime, your adrenaline's going, you're not real sure. So it shifted to second, and I'm waiting for time to gauge track position. And I'm not sure. He seems a little harder to catch than he should be. And then it shifts into high gear, and it's still not where I think I should be on him. And then as I'm rolling by him, I'm just taking a chance. I think I can get there and still scrub a little ET. And I do so, and I think I got there. And I'm looking at his winter picker light on the guardrail to see if it lights up. I'm not even looking at mine. And out of the peripheral, I see mine light up, and I'm almost in shock, to be quite honest. I snatch my head over, and I look, and I went, oh, my goodness, it's on. Like, it was that kind of moment, like, everything's silent, right? And, I've always wanted to run – I've always wanted to win a national event in a modified car. And we took this car because this would be the only year it could qualify. Because of COVID, we didn't think a lot of people would be going – the minimal amount of qualifying to get in would be lower this year, we figured. And the brothers thought I was crazy. You know, this is a car we've been working on and working on. They said, why do you want to take this car to the biggest race of the year? You're not sure you have it lined out yet. It's because I won't have another opportunity. And the dream was to win because the Jeff Taylors, the Grant Lewis, the Jack Suttons, the Elijah Boyds of the world in our time growing up made these cars iconic and famous. So we all, you know, as kids, were making the sounds of modified cars on the chip, on the start line, and the shifts, and the finish line at 10,000 RPM, and that kind of thing. So to win it was incredible. And then a funny story, I've always wanted to pull the parachute. I've never had a car with a parachute on before.
Wow.
So I've always said, if I ever win the final round of a national event, I'm going to pull the parachute. Well, in the final, after I was come off the shock factor of the wind light coming on, I said, oh, the parachute. So I pull the lever. And I'm looking back. I said, I don't see the parachute. I'm pulling, and so I said, well, I'm not sure what happened. And as luck would have it, where the little rod comes out of the parachute like this, it's about that much stuck, and it doesn't deploy. If you take your hand and you bump the parachute, it's going to pop out. So it was just, but whatever. I still got the win that I didn't think I was going to get.
Oh, man.
And to, you know, we always root for Dan Fletcher, and I told him after the final, I said, it's one of those things. Beating Dan Fletcher does not give me happiness. I want him to win. It is, it's not, it's nothing personal. But what beating a guy like Dan Fletcher does is it makes the win have value, and it gives it credibility. Not that it wouldn't for somebody else, but it's like I faced Dan Fletcher in my first final round of the U.S. Nationals, and it was a magnificent race. He didn't let off, and I snuck by him. He didn't red light. You know, he's never going to do that hardly. It was a terrific race on both ends of the racetrack, and this time it landed on my side of the win light. So, and that's what I'm really happy about, and I'm glad that Dan was an incredible sportsman after we ran. I know it hurts him to lose that. I'm not sure. You know, I know it's what he does for a living, and who does? No one wants to lose, and I apologize to my opponents that I'd raced, the ones we had the great races with. I said, I'm sorry you had to lose. You drove a terrific run, and they were all professional and so kind and said, good luck. Hope you have the best of luck next round. But and to see the win light come on, and I really almost don't even believe it now.
Well, it's happened. It's done it. I'm so thrilled to have you on, to be able to see you guys and see that passion and hear that story, Terry, like amazing. And then, you know, your brother, obviously a similar situation. He had one before, so it wasn't going for the first one, but it was like, what did Reinhardt say? You can set your years for 20 years ago. Oh no, we lost him. But fortunately he has already told his story. And Jerry, like, you had won this 20 years ago. I'm showing these photos. You carry the WFO radio sticker on your car, which is awesome. And I noticed it in the pits or in the staging lanes, and we got Terry back. I noticed it in the staging lanes, and I'm like, oh man, and I took a little video. And then as you're coming around the corner for the final round, I'm like, this guy's got a chance to win Indy. And so tell me about your final round run, Jerry.
Yeah, absolutely. So I ran a gentleman by the name of Parker DeVore. This guy is probably the rising star, especially in our division for NHRA Stock Limiter. You know, he has a like 1170 car, I believe what it is, and he's killer. One thing about how I drive, I never look at my opponents throughout the weekend. I never pull up the runs. I don't want to know how they're hitting the tree. That is completely irrelevant to me.
Interesting.
I have a strategy that I'm going to do, and it's basically about a package, right? And obviously, you know, you have to pay attention to how it plays out down track. But I don't want to know that these guys are murdering the tree, because it doesn't do me any good to know that. What I do, but I obviously know he's a very good driver, and he's not there in the final because he lucked out,
right?
And unfortunately for him, he missed the tree just a little bit. And when we left, I felt like I was pretty good. As Terry said, when he left the start line in his final, he felt like he was as good, if not maybe a tick better. That's exactly how I felt. When I left, I thought I was probably in the upper teens, because that's what I had been a couple times before. But as we're rolling, and as I put it in high gear, I realize I'm going to catch him really quick. So I'm highly confused, because I did not anticipate him missing the tree. And I didn't anticipate being 001 on the starting line myself. So obviously it created a big gap down there that I was able to catch pretty early. And I just, you know, I got on the brakes and just went through. And, you know, like Terry said, when he was talking about his win light come on, when we rolled through and my win light blinked on and I killed the motor, you know, the parking lights were on, my race pack dash was on. And all I could hear was the gravel in the top end, you know, hitting the inner fender wells. And it's just silent. And I'm telling you, I'm like, the first thing I say out loud was, it's over. It's over. No more. It's over. And like, I have chills right now, even just to tell me about it. So as I roll off and it's real dark around the turnoff, and they have the, you know, the banner where they're doing all the photos. So one of the NHRA officials point at me to kind of go off and park off to the side. So I did. And I said, wait a minute, I'm not staying here. I'm going to go watch my brother. So I fired up the car really quick. And I ran around the corner while I stopped where Parker was. And we got out and we talked about the final. classy guy, man. That guy, you just lost the final round of the U.S. Nationals, and this guy was straight up 100% class. So, and I hate it. Like Terry said, like I know what it's like to lose, especially the final round of Indy. I know that, and it never feels good. And you don't know when the next opportunity is going to be. But this guy is such a good driver. He'll be back again and win it. But so when I left Parker, I went to get my time slip. And I have to tell you this, Joe, you're going to love this. You're going to love this. So as I roll up to get my time slip from the very sweet lady that's always there every year, she says, "Congratulations, darling, you won your one." So I'm really happy. And I'm looking at my time slip. Well, I have my contacts in. For some reason, I can't see it up close. The print, the ink is a little light on the slip. And I thought my time, and I'm real happy at this point. And I see my time slip, and I think I see it say 060, like from my reaction time, 060. And I said, no. And she says, "No, darling, you won." And I said, "No." So I open my door, I get out of my car, and I run towards the light from the racetrack. And I hold my time slip up in the air, and I see 0.001 for the reaction time. Of course, now my heart drops. I'm jumping up and down. I'm so excited. So I was talking about from one emotion to the other. Not that I would have been unhappy with winning with an 060, but you know, yeah. We all want to be.
You want to perform.
You just want to put on a good performance.
Yeah, you
exactly.
want to perform. I just want to point out sure. the reason you couldn't see was because you're 40. Okay, just welcome to it.
Right.
That's what it
yeah,
happens.
Exactly.
That what happens when yeah. you become 40, and is that we got a celebrity viewer out there, another U.S. Nationals champion, Erica Enders, watching out there to see you guys. She says she loves you guys, and we're hoping to have Erica on the show whenever she's ready. I texted you, E. No response yet, but she's out there watching, of course, the Emmons brothers.
She was unbelievable. So we were able to watch her final round and watch her win, and then we had to hurry back to our car because that's when our rounds were starting to begin, was after that. And it was so cool to see her win, but we were not able to go down to the finish line and talk to her. But she came back to our pit area when she was finished with all of her festivities, and she had her medallion around her neck. And the first thing I did, I walked up right up to her and I grabbed her medallion, and I said, "Look, I have to have some of this luck. Please give it to me." So anyway, but it was really cool to have her come by, and the final was really cool. And then Cole Cummings and his girlfriend actually came by, and I had no idea he was going to be there, but I was running out of time to watch Terry run the final. So when I left the lady at the time ticket booth, I went over to the NHRA trailer to do my fuel check. Well, I was just going to leave it and come back and do it. Well, as soon as I opened my door, I could hear the burnout going on of Superstock. And it was a pretty far run to get to the finish line. Cole Cummings and his girlfriend were right there at my door. And how he knew that I needed help to get to the finish line, I'll never know. I jumped on the golf cart and we took off to the finish. We were on the return road. As soon as we stopped at the finish line, the tree was coming down for Superstock. So because of him and his girlfriend, I was able to watch the final go down, which is very special to me. And of course, to see him win against, Dan Fletcher was pretty impressive. But I do want to say, Terry said that he had a lucky round. If you looked at my results, I feel like I did an okay job of driving. But in round two, I had to run Justin Lamb, right? So that's the Dan Fletcher, right? So, and I was like 1:30 on the reaction time, and I had made a mistake of, I was using the blocker, and which I had told myself I wasn't going to do, but I was blocking the first two bulbs, not just the other side. And I knew better when I rolled up in the burnout, I could see the pre-stage and the stage lights glowing from the pair before. So that's my indicator. If you see a halo around those blue lights, it's too dark. You're going to see the glare coming from behind your blocker, and it's gonna affect your reaction time. So I don't know how I saved it, but I left on nothing. I saw a glare, and then because I leave with a two-step when I'm blocking a tree, he had both feet to the floor. Well, I had released the brake on nothing, on just a glare. So the bulb was on yet, but when I released it, I pushed it back down immediately. So my car did this noise and it did some acrobatic on the start line. It did the noise and it kind of jumped. And I'm telling you, it had to affect Justin Lamb. I'm telling you, it had to have. And he was, and I'm like, when I take off, and so then I see the yellow light, or it's green by this point. So I take off and I'm like, oh my gosh, what in the world? And then I look up and I see my wind light on. And I'm going down the track. And I'm like, what did you just do? I'm talking to Lamb, going out there, what did you just do? So I felt really bad. And again, not to sound like Terry, but everyone there is there to win. We all want to give it 110%. And I just felt bad. I felt like I owed Justin Lamb better. So I made the decision. I came back to, I had no time shots, open tree. I made the decision, forget it. I took the blinder down, threw it away. And I said, sunlight or dark, I'm going to open tree. So I had no practice. But luckily I'd been testing a few months before at my local track, Austin Hayward. He runs the Houston Raceway Park track for us.
I know Austin.
And he's a very good guy. And he's done phenomenal with testing and making sure the track is good. So we did a lot of testing beforehand at nighttime with no blockers and things like that. So I knew how to set my car up and feel pretty confident that I could carry on. And that's what I did. So I felt like I did an okay job from that point forward. But everybody needs a lucky round. I'm not going to say that, that I didn't need it, but that was my lucky break. But everyone I ran was, they were 00 and they were driving machines against me. I mean, the math just fell my way. Why? I don't know. Right. And what I don't understand is there's so much talent out there, so many good cars, so good, so much talent that is incredible. So why did Terry and I be the lucky ones to win in our respective categories?
Oh, I know the reason. Right? I know the reason. It's because you had this WFO sticker on your car right there above. That's the
absolutely.
I mean, it's pretty obvious, I think.
Yeah, that's absolutely. So we're blessed. I mean, and I told everyone I ran, like, man, what a good race, and everyone did a phenomenal job. Would I go back up and if we could be guaranteed the same reaction times for myself and my opponent? Would I go back up there and think I could win? The answer is to you, I don't know. I mean, it was a driver's race on their end and a driver's race on my end. The math fell my way. That's all I can tell you.
Well, that's when I always reference, some people say the racing gods. Some say, I like to use the word cosmic forces, because there is an element of energy out there that we don't understand. When it's your day, it's your day. Everybody's got that crazy story. And this was your day as a family, and you guys got it done, and it's an amazing accomplishment. Stock, super stock, as tough as it gets. You went through the field. Terry beats Fletcher. You beat Justin Lamb. Like, it doesn't get better than that, and I wish you congratulations. It was fun to watch. I enjoyed the heck out of it. At that point, I was like, limping down the stretch, and Alan Reinhart's calling finals, and we barely survived. But for you guys to go out there and get the job done and do it, it was great, and I'm so excited that you were able to come on the show and give us some insight, some stories, and some behind the scenes. And your description of the silence of victory as the gravel hits the fender wells, that is something that, man, I wish that everybody could feel that or hear that. I've won a bracket race and know what that part is like. I definitely know what it's like to not see my win light come on, but that's a different story. But amazing, and that's what this sport is all about, getting people interested who are interested in Nitro to stick around, watch stock, watch super stock, get to know, walk the pits. It's moments like that. You guys did such a great job. Congratulations. And thank you for coming on the show. Any final thoughts? Terry, you first. Final thoughts as you, move on from winning the U.S. Nationals.
I will tell everybody one thing. You can't win it from home. You have to go. You have to go. You get to a point where the work is extreme in preparation, or maybe the logistics for traveling is tight. But I'm telling you, you'll never win it from the sofa. You've got to get in the truck. You've got to make the commitment, and you have to go. And I myself have experienced that. But when you miss one race due to rain or weather or logistics from work, that it's easy to miss more after that. But I'm telling you, my takeaway from all this, you can't win it if you're not there.
Love
it.
You
have to go.
That's an excellent point. Terry, what about you? Jerry?
Okay, absolutely. Now I'll make this quick for you. So one thing that I always tell people, so anytime I'm in a restaurant, I see, older couple, a man and a wife with gray hair. They're obviously in their later 70s or 80 years old, and they're having dinner and they're eating, pretty.
Oh, man. Uh-oh. He froze up. Those older, the older gentleman. That was like, this is a cliffhanger. He'll be back.
Maybe he'll be back in just a minute.
Yeah, we just got to hang tough for a second.
Hopefully he's got a refresh.
Yes. Do you know the story, Terry? You want to just tell it?
Yeah, I've heard him talk about.
No,
this.
Don't steal his thunder. We're gonna just tough it out. We're gonna wait it out. I'm gonna kick him out, and he'll come back just like you came back, and we'll hear that. Yeah. That's a cliffhanger, and it's cool. What about reporting back to the fam? Like that had to be cool.
Yeah, you know, Speedy, the older brother, he does a terrific job, and he's very kind and very patient and lets us. He's very passionate about racing, too. And his boys are getting older now, and now he wants to come back. So we'll all four be racing together next year, and like we used to do in the very beginning. And, you know, we lost my dad a couple of years ago, and I think one of the things, the takeaway from that, too, was the commitment that he gave to us as a family, right? We had a lot of windshield time together talking and just going down, making the family time matter. And I think that that's important now. His boys are ready to go. They want to come, and he can bring his boys with him.
Wow.
So,
that's the next generation. And we're always talking about the next generation.
Actually, I'm going to switch seats with Jerry.
He's coming there. You guys are in the same location. You're in his office. Get in there. Have him just come in there. Get in there. Yeah. Terry, thank you very much.
Joe.
Appreciate it. Look at these guys, like, getting all, you know, like.
Hey, Joe, are you there?
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
That was the cliffhanger of
ever. For some reason, my phone was overheated. It said.
Yeah, this thing will heat them up. All right, tell us. There's two old people. They're sitting in a restaurant.
Okay. All right, sorry about that. So we're sitting in restaurants, and you know, and I see, you know, an older couple eating. And it really gets to me. And my wife would tell you all the time that I have a moment. Especially when we're at the races and we go to dinner, right? So my hope for them is that I hope that they have done everything in life that they wanted to do, right? That they didn't miss, for me in my world, they didn't miss a chance to win a world championship or a national event or even a divisional event because they just didn't feel like going, or they let some small inconvenience of a flat tire on the trailer keep them from attending an event, right? That they, you know, had maybe a negative mindset. They better have done everything that they wanted to do because it's too late for them, right? So I have a lot of respect for people in their late 60s and their 70s still racing. Pete Peary, a guy that races with us all the time, he's a killer.
Yes.
And I tell him all the time, I'm never going to let you not race. You will take your last breath before you say you're not going to go to a drag strip. So, I believe that if it's your passion, you need to live it out every day because I'm 47 now. When I won my first Indy in 1994, I was 21. Now it does seem like a minute, but it doesn't seem that long ago. And I cannot believe that much time has passed. And I'm very passionate about NHRA. I'm very passionate about the sport that we get to represent. And I just think that if you have an opportunity to go racing, you need to do it today.
I love it. We are both 47 years old. That is pretty cool. I did not know you were exactly 47. Jerry, thank you so much. Thanks to Terry. Congratulations. Great job and a lot of fun and entertainment. And thank you for sharing your stories here on WFO Radio. And really, thank you very much for the sticker. Like, you know, it seems like such a small thing and you got a lot of stickers on your car. But speaking of credibility and value, like for you guys, I want to reach out so much to our Lucas Oil Series racers, bracket racers, sportsman racers. Yes, we do speak with, you know, Nitro Stars and Pro Stock winners like Erica. But I recognize that you guys are genuinely the backbone of the sport. And for you guys to be into what we're doing, it means a lot. It means that it's entertaining and it's good. So thank you for doing that.
Absolutely. I'm glad to help represent you any way I can.
All right. Well, congratulations. Go have fun. Enjoy your whatever you're doing this weekend as U.S. Nationals winner. Jerry, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
There
Bye-bye.
He goes. Jerry and Terry Emmons with us here on WFO Radio. How great was that? And these are just two of the personalities that if you're out at the track long enough and you go to enough events, you get to know, like, you know, Nitro, of course, takes the lion's share of the oxygen and Pro Stock and the bikes, of course. But you got to get out into the Lucas Oil Series pits. I say it all the time when I do my walking tours, when we used to do walking tours pre-pandemic, I would say, like, you must make, there's a right way and a wrong way to go see an NHRA national event. Like, the right way is to go to all 3 days. Sorry. If you go in one day, it's just not enough. You can't do all of these things. And you must go walk the Lucas Oil pits and get close and talk to some drivers and pick some favorites and understand what's going on. And these guys, this family, perfect example. And there are many others of people out there chasing their dreams. And just really cool to see that they achieved one, right? That they achieved a dream of winning the U.S. National. Look at this. Look at that. What's better than that? I can't think of too many things. All right, final comments in the comment section. Final comments. I see today was one of those days where the Facebook was throttling us for a little bit, but it's no big deal. We'll fight back, share the show, start a watch party, listen to the podcast, et cetera, and so on. If you got a final comment, put it up there in the comment section. In the meantime, over the next couple of weeks, I do want to connect with all the winners, like Erica Enders. Erica, of course, to talk about her big win, the win of redemption. I'm not saying that I called it, but we did have Erica on right before the race for a reason. And we did talk about this. That interview is available. But clearly, she was driven and determined and got a congratulations shout-out from the President of the United States. That's never happened before. Can't wait to talk with Erica about that. And all the winners, from Troy Williams Jr. to Stevie Fast Jackson to Scotty Polachek, who Scotty and Susan Polachek, they're dodging fires up there in Oregon right now. Pretty crazy how real life will suck you right back in to reality. Also want to say, Nitro Ninja up there in the corner of the show, Dominic Lagana, want to encourage everybody to continue to get those Lagana Strong t-shirts and support Dom and that whole charitable organization they got going on. Big thanks to Marvin Rodak and RodaksCoffeeAndGrills.com, the hot sauce and the spice rub, everything good, 817-924-6821. Marvin Rodak, my buddy, and he supports us here on WFO Radio. Also, samtech.edu, the School of Automotive Machinists and Technology. Start your education at full speed, samtech.edu. We'll be hearing from Aaron Stanfield on the Factory Stock Podcast. Aaron picking up his first win in Factory Stock Showdown. Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School, the Dragster Adventure. You can drive a dragster. Think about that. You and your buddies racing each other in dragsters at Frank Hawley's. What's better than that? There's nothing. Go to frankhawley.com. Find out more. And Total Seal Piston Rings, the leader in ring seal technology. TotalSeal.com. Got a new Hidden Horsepower episode coming out Saturday. Joey Arrington, NASCAR royalty. Joey Arrington, the Arrington's been around for a long time. Learned the trade from Maurice Petty and was running around the shop at Petty Enterprises as a young man, and is going to share some of those great stories. So check us out on Hidden Horsepower. You can go to TotalSeal.com to find out more information. Also want to mention NitroFish Ultimate Gear. Go to NitroFish Racing. Use the promo code WFO20 if you're buying anything, including WFO Radio t-shirts, and they got face coverings now, all that stuff. But don't use it if you're going to get the Lagana Strong t-shirt. I know that's complex instruction, like use it, don't use it, but you know why. It's all for Dominic and Richie and those guys in their recovery. So please get on it. All right, final comments. There are none. I get it. It was a long show. This one says, look, it was a great show. Joe, are you married or any children? The answer is no and no. Was, but no longer, and no children. Got a little nephew, though, who is great. Haven't seen him in a little while, though. Can't wait till I can. And, after being at the race, I went and got one of those rapid COVID tests. I gave that a test drive today. And got, great results. The results were negative, which is good. And I feel super excited about that. What an event it was. We had such a great time. And the U.S. Nationals, unlike anything else in the world of motorsports, because a guy like Jerry Emmons, a guy like Terry Emmons can go out there and win on the same track as Erica Enders and Sean Langdon and Jack Beckman, who will also be on the show at some point this week, next week. Otherwise, we're going to be tracking them down. If you're still looking for more, Alan Reinhart, spoke with him yesterday, did a full debrief session on the show. Really fun, really cool. To those of you who said what's up to me out at the U.S. Nationals, thank you for doing that. I hadn't been to a track in a long time. And to go out, show up at the U.S. Nationals, and I feel like I had a pretty good event. It was a lot of fun. Most importantly, though, seeing all of you, the race fans, that is number one for me. Mitchell saying what's up. Thank you, Mitchell. Really appreciate it. And that's it. Tomorrow, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, working on guests. Erica, I still have a couple of hundred texts to go through. Yeah, I guess I should have thought of that. When your phone explodes when you win the U.S. Nationals. We will catch up with Erica. We will catch up with all the winners based on their schedule and availability. And the good news is we got a couple weeks till the Gator Nationals. It's looking like I'll be there too. So I am happy about that. All right, everybody, that's going to do it. Thank you very much. Thanks to the Emmons brothers. Thanks to Sean Langdon. Learned a lot with Sean. Him and Snake going back and forth. I say you push back. That's what I say. All right, that's going to do it. We'll see you next time right here on WFO Radio.
WFO!
This is WFO Radio.
I love WFO Radio.
Oh, yeah.
The views and opinions of the hosts, guests, or callers do not necessarily reflect that of the station ownership, advertisers, or agencies.
Hey, engine builders. Total Seal Piston Rings are the leader in ring seal technology, and they go out of their way to help their customers and will make custom sets for any specific piston you might have. Customer service, top-notch. Made in America? Absolutely. They're located in Phoenix, Arizona, and they've got everything it takes to develop the world's best piston rings. Give them a call at 800-874-2753 or go to totalseal.com.
Start your education at full speed with the School of Automotive Machinists and Technology. Accelerate your career as a high-performance engine builder with classroom instruction and practical hands-on experience in the lab, on the dyno, and at the track. In addition to the block, head, and CNC programs, SAM now offers motorsport, EFI tuning, and an Associates of Applied Science degree. And SAM is a military-friendly school, approved to train veterans and other eligible persons under the GI Bill. Start your education at full speed. Go to samtech.edu today.
We're talking gourmet coffee, we're talking hot sauces, we're talking spice rubs, we're talking everything good at RodaxCoffeeAndGrills.com. Marvin Rodak, been doing it since the 70s, figured out that life is better with great coffee, and oh, he's so right. 817-924-6821. Call Marvin. He'll roast up some coffee fresh for you. Throw in some hot sauce, some spice rub, and you will be loving it. Hit them up, RodaxCoffeeAndGrills.com. Attention adrenaline junkies, Frank Hawley's Dragster Adventure is calling you. Rides available for the 2020 season. Go to frankhawley.com. They're coming to a track near you. It makes a great gift, whether it be licensing for Super Comp, Super Gas, all the way up to Top Alcohol. They can do it. But if you're a drag racing fan, and you've always imagined what it might be like to drive a dragster to accelerate 0 to 60 in 3 seconds and run 10s in the quarter mile, give them a call. 866-480-7223, frankhawley.com, the Dragster Adventure, and tell them you heard it on WFO.
Hey, WFO Universe. Want to hear your favorite interviews before anyone else? I'm talking VIP access. Want to get right to the interviews? Go to Patreon.com/WFO Radio. Get special VIP content, early access to interviews, and get straight to the interviews on Patreon.com/WFO Radio. That's patreon.com/WFO Radio. Become a Patreon, become a WFO VIP.
This is WFO Radio.